Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. Make sure you subscribe if you're new to the channel, and smash that thumbs up button. A shout out to all my channel members and my patrons, as you guys rock, as always. Now, let's get spooky. If done correctly, caving isn't overly dangerous. Make sure you have supplies. Know where you're going, and don't go in the tight spots you're not 100% sure you can get out of. I was interested in getting into the hobby because I lived in an area with a good number of available caves and a community surrounding the hobby. I wasn't ready to sink my money into climbing gear just yet. I just wanted to explore some easy caves to start off with. I was chatting in an online group trying to get a trip arranged when Gary contacted me. His friends were going to a hidden cave just for a walk around and wanted to know if I was interested in joining them. Gary was well known to be an all-around good guy in a small town, so I jumped at the chance. He warned me that the entrance was a bit of a walk into the woods, and I should make sure that I had plenty of supplies. When I arrived at our meeting spot the next weekend, Gary introduced me to everyone. Ross, Jill, and Brad all arrived with him. Vaguely I know who they all were before they even told me their names. When you live in a small town, you just know everybody one way or another. I could trust going into a hidden cave with them. No serial killer vibes from any of them. We shook hands and within 5 minutes of walking into the forest, we talked like old friends. So Gary, does this super secret cave have a name? I asked him while we walked. Oh, right. I didn't really tell you much, have I? The cave is actually a section of the old Filler mine. I knew the name Filler, even if I never heard about there being a mine in these woods. It took me a few seconds to put a name to the face. Filler, like Old Man Filler outside of town? The one who everyone thinks is crazy? Be nice. He's a harmless old man, but yes. His family owned the mine before it shut down, Gary explained. I might be the only person who didn't know anything about the cave that we were headed towards. The mine caved in because of a dumb reason, right? Jill piped up. Like they were mining the walls in the wrong way or something? They were mining the support pillars. After Gary spoke, we all started to roast the miners of the past for mining into what was keeping the roof over their heads. We went on for a few minutes before Gary got us to settle down. The cave-in killed a lot of people inside. I never found entrances besides this one because people just covered it up trying to forget it ever happened. I haven't even been able to figure out what they were even mining for, so little information remains about the mine. I did find an old unfinished map of some sections. This mine was long at some point, and I mean long, like they just kept going down. I asked my grandmother about the Filler mine and she only said, "They dug their way straight down to hell," Brad said, making his point sound as ominous as he could. We all had a small laugh at his remark. I was amazed to find out about this. After living here my entire life, I never heard of the slightest mention of mining across these parts, past or present. My new hobby was already teaching me some things. I was excited to see what the old mine had in store, but Gary had to damper my high spirits a little. like I said. This is a small portion of it. I thought it was a good starter area. It could be a bit of a walk, and it only has one turn before a dead end. The ceiling gets a little low for that turn, and you have to crawl to get through, but not tight enough to get stuck. With that being said, just because this cave has been safe in the past doesn't mean it's always safe. Be careful inside. Don't go off on your own, and... Gary started to list a bunch of safety rules I already knew. They really didn't need repeating, but I was glad he cared enough about our safety to remind us. And being reminded wouldn't hurt either. It gave us something to hear while we walked to the location. After an hour of trudging along in the woods, Gary stopped us. I'd expected that. A cave opening in the cliff or some hill. Something along those lines. The hole in the ground wasn't what I thought we would be crawling into. Dirt and loose stones created a ramp large enough for us to walk down in pairs comfortably. Gary was double-checking his lights and putting on a helmet when I saw something under his jacket. I didn't notice it before because I was certain he was wearing a holster on his belt. That suddenly made me uncomfortable. Guns weren't uncommon and it was legal to have one hidden away like that. I just didn't know why he would bring one along. "Gary, are you armed?" I asked slowly, a bit nervous. "Oh, all right. I'm sorry, I didn't tell you. I've been hurt out here with one of these three before, and they're fine with it, so I didn't even think to say anything. It has the safety on, and I'm really serious about never using it, unless it's a life-or-death situation," he explained calmly. "We ran into some really sketchy guys the last time that we were out. Some of them parked trailers out here for some weird drug operations." Gary decided to start bringing his gun just in case, Ross added. I nodded, understanding the reason behind it. So far, they hadn't murdered me, so I felt like I was in the clear and should be safe with them. For the short time I've known them, Gary felt like a very responsible and prepared person. If I was with anybody else, I would have ditched the moment I knew that I was going into a mine with strangers who could draw a weapon on me at any moment. Gary won me over fully when he handed out some peanut butter cookies so good I would have gladly followed strangers into the woods for. After he made us all have a snack and drink some water, he started down the dirt ramp into the darkness below. Ross took up the rear. Jill and I held hands carefully to make our way down. Gary readied the bottom just in case any one of us tripped. Brad soon joined us. Ross nearly fell over because his backpack was so heavy, but he saved himself at the last second. "Hey, if this place was so hard to find information about, how did you know it was a mine belonging to the Filler family?" I asked. I turned on my flashlight and started to look around the area. It was wide enough for us to walk, and back in the day, plenty of space to work. The cream-colored walls glittered very faintly in my dim beam, and I wondered what type of rock it was. "I stumbled upon this opening and found the old helmet inside," Gary said, and Brad coughed. "I found the opening. I went back for supplies, and you just went inside without me." "I stayed in the light. It was perfectly safe. Anyway, the helmet had Property of Filler Mine Co. on it. I took it up to the old Filler's place and he had told me about the mine. He didn't know any parts were still open and warned me about the normal dangers of cave-ins. He told me I had a kind soul, so he thought I wouldn't be in danger inside the mine." Our small group made more mocking sounds. The old man was a bit off, but still harmless. He was the resident crazy and an easy target. Gary might be the only person in our town who would listen to anything Filler had to say. He didn't believe in any of the weird stuff the old man said. Still, he was kind enough to at least listen. Once again, we got quieted down as Gary went over the rules, as if we had never heard them before. If he could get away with it, I thought he might want to form a line holding hands so we wouldn't get lost in a one-way mine. Soon, we started walking along a slow pace, taking everything in. Once we stepped away from the natural light, everything started to look a bit creepy in our flashlight beams. The mine was untouched for years. It was a good spot for animals to live, but we saw no signs of life. No bats, no rodents, Not even any bugs were inside the musky darkness. Wind blew through the opening. We felt like it sounded like the walls were whispering around us. I stopped to feel a large bolt sticking out of the wall. I didn't know anything about mining and wasn't sure what it was used for. On the ceiling was remains of hooks that may have held old lanterns. No, that might not be right. I've heard dangers of gas inside mines, so why would they use lanterns? If they didn't, what would they use for light before the light bulb was invented? I should research mines if I remembered to do so. The group was leaving me behind, so I started to pick up the pace to go after them. The only other living thing inside the mine I had seen was some patches of mushrooms, or fungus. I'm still not sure of the difference between the two if there is one. I didn't even notice them at first because they blended in with the walls so well. They were the same color and looked like pebbles all bunched together. The texture even looked rough and rocky. I didn't dare touch them with my bare skin, so I just nudged some with my boot to see if they were really mushrooms and not some weird-looking rocks. The others were talking about some things that I wasn't very interested in. For my first cave trip, I thought I was doing very well, until we got to the bend after a while of walking in a straight line. Gary stopped in front of us and took off his backpack to get adjusted to head through the small tunnel we came up on. The dead end is on the other side of this. The last time I was here, a small hole opened up as far as I could tell. There is another area beyond the wall. I asked Ross to come along and stick a camera through to see if we could find anything interesting. Ross gave us a little wave, and I understood why his bag was so heavy. He could use a small camera, but I assumed he brought a bunch of equipment to see what was on the other side in real time. I'll go first. Since you and Jill have never been through here yet, you can go after me. Brad and Ross will stay behind just in case you start freaking out. It's not that tight, but it does go on for longer than you would expect. Gary was already down low, ready to go through the small opening in front of us. My plan was to see if I could crawl in on my hands and knees. Hunching over while walking might hurt after a while. When he disappeared through, I gave him a head start and went in after him. Jill wasn't eager to go, so I jumped ahead of her. The rocks dug into my knees, even though my jeans somewhat protected me. I needed the hunch through. It hurt my back like I thought it would, but at least I wasn't shredding my knees and my palms. I never had issues with enclosed spaces or the dark. Gary kept telling us comforting facts about how it wasn't very tight, and I wouldn't get stuck with having my pack on my back. It was dusty, and I wasn't adjusted to moving my body in that position. Still, I should have made it through without any problems. To this day, I don't know what happened to me inside that small little tunnel in the dark. My light flickered out. I wasn't worried. Gary was on the other side and he would have a spare. I just needed to keep moving forward. Then, I felt something brush against my arm. I jerked back and knocking my elbow against the wall. I cursed and fear spread throughout my body when I didn't hear my voice. I spoke again, only to have no words come out. No, I was speaking, I just wasn't hearing it. How had I suddenly gone deaf in that tunnel? I kept trying to speak, getting more and more freaked out by each passing second. I kept moving forward, but in the dark I couldn't tell how fast or how far I was going. I felt something else brush against my fingertips, and I shook them trying to get whatever it was away from me, only to have that feeling keep happening no matter how much I moved in the small space. It felt like threads were brushing against my skin. I felt panic at the idea I had gone through a spider web. Gary had just passed through here. He should have already cleared a path through the webs if that was the case. I was choking out small frightened sounds even though I couldn't hear them. The last thing I wanted was to be covered in spiders in the dark. Gary was right about the tunnel being longer than I expected. It felt like I was already hunched over for an hour. My thigh muscles throbbed and I switched to crawling on my knees, refusing to stop. Slowly, a rumbling sound came to my ears. At first, I was glad to be hearing something again, but soon I became outright frantic thinking about the rumbling was a sign of a cave-in. I needed to get out of there. My knees became torn and bloody from the scrambling over the rocks. My arms bumped against the walls and my pack scraped against the ceiling. Soon, I was on the verge of hyperventilating and beyond any kind of rational thought. Tears strung my eyes, making them sore and gritty from the dust in the tunnel. When I thought I couldn't get any more frightened, I felt it. A cold hand wrapped around my ankle that felt off. It felt, for a lack of better words, squishy. I let out a scream, pushing through and bursting out of the tunnel into a large enclosed area. I kept going, pressing my back against the far wall, tears streaming down my face. In my state, I didn't even notice Gary or what he was looking at. I just stared at the tunnel opening, waiting for whatever it was to come out after me. When nothing did, I finally looked down to see how badly I'd hurt myself, only to see nothing. My knees were dirty, but not all cut up and bleeding like I had thought inside the tunnel. It just didn't make any sense. I felt all those things, all the cuts and scrapes in my elbows against the walls. I should be bleeding, but I was fine. I looked over at Gary, scared and confused, wanting answers. There was a powerful flashlight illuminating the space. In the light, I saw his face and my stomach sank to the floor. I followed his gaze to look at what made him so pale and sweating in fear. Against the other wall was a body. At one point, it had been a person. A man, maybe. He was dead and had been dead for a long time. His skin shriveled and rotted. It didn't smell, so that was a small blessing. Seeing a dead man in the back of a cave would unsettle anyone, but he wasn't just dead. He was covered in the same fungus I had seen throughout the cave. The faintly glittering caps grew out in bunches. Only half of the dead man's face was exposed. I lost the battle with my stomach and threw up those cookies I had eaten earlier beside myself. The man, somehow, still had his eyes, white and blind in death. "It's Old Man Filler," Gary said in a small voice. I almost didn't hear him. Gary could recognize that shriveled and dead face. I could barely handle seeing this man without knowing who it was. Gary was holding himself together pretty well. He looked at me, eyes wide, when he realized that more people were coming into the small space. Darting to the tunnel, he got down to the opening just as Jill poked her head out. He shielded her sight from the body against the wall. I heard soft voices of them talking, but my mind wasn't able to process what was going on. I was rubbing and scratching at them when Jill came out and turned away before she saw the state Old Man Filler was in. She couldn't really turn around in the tunnel with Brad and Ross behind her. Gary decided to let them come through to go back in instead of trying to turn in the small space. He warned Jill in time so she didn't see the body. Ross and Brad couldn't help themselves. They had the look. Their reactions were similar to mine. Ross nearly fainted, and Brad started to reach off to the side of the small room.
"Jesus, what did he die of?" Brad asked in a hoarse whisper.
"I don't know," Gary admitted. Brad really didn't care about how the man died. He just was talking for the sake of talking. All of us were in shock and didn't know how to handle our discovery.
"Ross, you know the way back to the car, right? Can you go and call the sheriff down here?"
Gary asked, collecting himself enough to be in charge again.
"I can, but I don't think he could fit through the small tunnel," Ross answered back.
"No, he can't, but Deputy Tilly can." Ross nodded, understanding. "Someone died and we needed the police over here. No matter how much we wanted to believe that this was a prank, we needed to take it seriously." The thought came to me, wondering why Gary was sending Ross. Surely we all were going to get help.
"I'm going to stay here with Mr. Feller," Gary stated.
"He's dead. It's not like he's going anywhere," Brad answered, and Jill made a small whimper from where she was. It sounded cold and harsh, but it was just the facts.
"I know. I just can't leave him here. He died alone and has been in here for God knows how long. It doesn't feel right to just leave him in the dark again."
Gary was a good guy. If I didn't think it before, I thought that now. He looked terrified staying alone with a body. Still, He would stay for the sake of the old man, no matter how scared he felt. I started to rub my arm again while considering to stay with him. The shock of the body made me forget my freakout inside the tunnel. I didn't want to go back inside. The only other option was to stay in a spot next to the fungus-riddled dead guy. I chose the tunnel. This first cave was going to be the death of my hobby before it even got started. "All right, we'll be back soon. Do you have a spare flashlight? Mine died in the tunnel," I asked, knowing Gary was prepared enough to have a spare. He nodded, digged into his bag, and gave me one. We let Jill go first through the tunnel, trying to get her out of there faster. She looked paler and sicker than the rest of us, though she hadn't really seen the body yet. Brad followed after her, then Ross, after giving Gary one last look. I also gave Gary a long look, delaying going back inside that tunnel. The second time, though, I didn't have any trouble. My flashlight stayed on, and I didn't see the spiderwebs or fibers I had felt the first time. The three of us jogged, almost ran, on the uneven floor back to the entrance, Ross falling behind with his heavy pack, and Jill tripped a few times. Once we got to the slope, we scrambled up. Ross left his pack behind to make a run for the car. I was such in a state of shock, I didn't even think about using my cell phone. I just sat on the mossy ground and waited. Over an hour had passed, and the sheriff and Deputy Tilly arrived, being guided by Ross. From the look on their faces, they didn't believe any of this. I heard Ross explain what we found, sounding like he already went over it before. The sheriff was a larger man, so he stayed outside with us. As Tilly went inside, Ross regretfully guiding him that far as well. I waited, watching Jill pace, looking ready to be sick. Outside the tunnel, the forest sounded so normal and peaceful. One would never guess that there was a dead man underground waiting to be found. I lost track of time when Ross and Tilly came back up. But where was Gary? Ross looked paler than he had been when we first found the corpse, while Tilly just looked confused. "They're gone," Ross explained in a choked voice. "What do you mean, gone?" I asked, equally as hoarse. When the two arrived inside the dead-end space, they found Gary's pack spilled over with nothing else. No body of Old Man Filler, and no Gary. That was impossible. They couldn't go further inside the mine, and the only exit was the one Jill and I watched the entire time. The next few hours were almost a mess of confusion. The sheriff was convinced that we were playing some sort of prank on him. Tilly believed something was going on, and somehow all of us convinced him Gary was with us that day, but then he thought we had done something to him and used this story as a cover-up. He wanted to bring us in, but had nothing really to go on. Dejected, we were all released to go home, but warned not to leave town until things got sorted out. When I arrived home, I was so tired I kicked off my boots and flopped into bed. I slept for 10 hours, only waking up when my arm was itchy. The news about Gary being missing already spread around town by the next day. I wanted to go there and look for him, but I came down with the bad flu the moment I got home from the cave. My entire body shook from the chills, no matter how many sweaters and blankets I piled on. I could eat just fine, but felt as if I couldn't get enough food in my stomach. For days I was in this state, too weak and feverish to do anything. I finally got enough strength to take a long shower, rubbing my arms. I felt it. A bump on my left forearm. Turning it into the light, I saw a pale mass that made me feel sick. I nearly fainted seeing it. Against my better judgment, I poked it, trying to feel if it was hard or soft. I gagged as my skin parted for something I recognized to sprout out through the skin. A mushroom cap. My entire body crawled under the hot water. Frantically, I grabbed at it, pulling it out of my arm, tossing it aside. I dug into the skin, pulling out masses of mushrooms as blood started to pour to mix with the hot water. I kept going for what felt like hours. I felt my vision start to fade and prickle. Unable to stop myself, I fainted in the shower. I lived alone, so there was no one to check on me. I woke up hot and confused. I remembered the mushrooms on my arms, and I let out a scream looking at it to see nothing.
a scar I didn't recognize, but no bumps or mushroom caps. I still checked over my entire body several times, feeling faint before I turned off the water and went to bed. I still didn't shake off my fever. My entire body shook from chills and my joints ached. I woke up in the middle of the night, moonlight pouring into my room. I wanted nothing more than to pull the blankets over my head to close the world out. Against my own will, my body moved. Slowly, I made my way to my window, feeling an urge stronger than I have ever felt in my life to look outside. What I saw made me want to scream, but my body refused to listen to me. Gary was outside staring up at me, glittering mushrooms growing out of one side of his face. His sandy brown hair blew in the wind as he remained expressionless, one eye white and blind while the other one still faintly blue. He wanted me to go outside and meet him. I could feel it. My blood was on fire. As it pumped, it felt wrong, like it was thicker than normal, as if something else was inside it traveling through my veins. I stared down at the person I quickly considered a friend in my days. My body wanted to go outside to wherever he was going, but my mind refused. We stayed like that in a standstill as the moon moved over the sky. The next thing I was aware of was waking up in my bed. I darted up, looking around to see anything unusual in my room. I went over weakly to the window expecting to see Gary still, but didn't see any signs of someone walking on the grass. I wanted to believe it was just a dream from the guilt of leaving him behind. My illness was just guilt, and the scratching feeling inside my body wasn't what I thought it was. I still have dreams about Gary waiting for me outside my window. I don't get out of bed, but I know he's there. I could feel him standing outside. I could hear thousands of soft voices begging me to go outside, to just go back to the mine. I don't know how much time I have left until I give in. One day, I will give in to those whispering voices and scratching inside my blood. Until I do go back inside that old mine, I regret ever going inside. The next time you're going to explore a cave, please be careful and make sure you know everything about it. And please, never go inside the filler mine if you ever come across it. If you do go inside despite all of these warnings, then, if you can, find us.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.